The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello.
There we go. That's it. No problem. Welcome in, everybody. It's Monday. Edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Bill, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Got Brandon. Oh, it's all B's today. Seemed like a lot of times it's Dan, Drew, Don. Yeah. It's B-Day.
I like that.
Today.
Triple B.
Bill, Brian, and Brandon all here in the studio. And, we welcome you into another week of The Drive. It is the week where there will be actual news.
How about that?
There will be news tomorrow because we're going to get a chance to spend some time with Alex Golish and both coordinators, yes. Joel Gordon and DJ Durkin tomorrow, as tomorrow is, quote, report day,
right.
Unquote. I mean, even though the players have all been here.
Yes, they reported many months ago.
Yes, they have. If they hadn't been, I mean, they'd be reported missing hadn't been there. But, yeah, it's official report day and then Wednesday, the first day of practice. And we'll be out there with an opportunity to watch some of practice Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday. So
yeah.
It's going to be a newsy week, which is great. I mean, there's been so much just other stuff that we've been talking about. And there's more that has happened over the weekend that we will talk about here today with a judge now saying, and I'm not surprised after we saw the news, I guess it was a week and a half ago, where some basketball players, including Keyshawn right. Hall, had sort of started the process in Ohio by seeking an injunction to give them their fifth year of eligibility. Now a judge has said all players who exhausted their eligibility and had not played 5 years are going to have an extra year of eligibility.
Right, and that is being appealed by the NCAA. But
I don't see where the NCAA is going to have much chance here because I wondered, Brian, when they decided to approve the 5 for 5, why not just go ahead and say
why not just avoid all
everybody
this?
Who hasn't used up 5 years in five. You're eligible.
It doesn't make sense. And it's just one of those many things that the NCAA does that doesn't make sense.
Oh,
it's
you're
like
right.
Suspending the Tennessee linebacker
for two
games because he accepted a flight,
$400 flight.
Paid back the money to his agent. Yeah, it's so silly. But that's
the NCAA. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things used to say NCAA is no clue at all. That's typical. So, yeah. It'll be interesting now because football players are involved. We were talking about it a little last week, saying it's going to happen. And at least now this is a blanket decision saying, all right, everybody. Now we'll see. I don't expect, or you don't know. I mean, maybe there's somebody out there that Auburn could be interested in. I'm sure there are some players, probably a quarterback or two, just for teams looking,
right?
Maybe not necessarily for a starter, but for depth.
Right.
And experience at a certain position, we'll go out there and see if they can add those players. I think this is going to be more impactful, I would think, for group of five smaller schools than it is because, look, most of the players that are out there aren't going to be impact players.
And a lot of the bigger programs have spent the budget for their rosters and or have filled out their rosters for the most part. One or two, here or there are going to trickle in. I'm sure some bigger schools that feel like had a lot of turnover that might want one more hole to fill, mm-hmm. might look for something. But, Yeah, I do think that's a good point about helping out some of the smaller schools and getting some more talent in there, some experienced talent. That'd be big for them.
And the thing is, after this year, if that ruling stands, then you'll know how much eligibility everybody has. This was something that was started by basketball players, but now it's for every sport. So we'll see.
We got to find out what to call the fifth year guys now. Fifth year guys? What
are we calling? I've wondered about that.
You can't call them graduates because you don't know if they're graduates.
Just call them 1, 2, 3, 4, 5s.
Okay.
Because they're not graduates necessarily. No. They might be.
Right.
They may just be.
If it was me, it'd be no. But
No.
I mean, some people can do it in
some
threes.
Of us, fifth year was like you're hoping you're a junior. As far as eligibility is concerned, I guess they're just going to have to be. We'll just have to call them. You'll know them as year 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 guys.
Yeah. It'll be a little different.
But. Yeah. So that that happened over the weekend. The other thing, which is just was mind blowing to me, was the SEC and the Big Ten coming out in support of the Protect College Sports Act.
Yes. And that was certainly a big surprise. It sort of turned over what I think everybody thought was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like that bill was dead. I mean, absolutely dead. And there's no guarantee that it's going to pass. But I think there's at least a chance now when you have the two super conferences coming out and supporting it.
And I think the SEC and Big Ten were most concerned about, the revenue sharing cap and being better able to control that and set it at a way where, teams couldn't exploit NIL or the ways to, add another 5, 8, 10 million, whatever it is, or more, really.
Oh, yeah. It was like going from 21 to nearly 50 million.
Yeah, exactly. And this bill, if it does eventually go through, raises it to 48.8 million. But some of that is set. Like some of it goes to women's and Olympic sports. Some of it goes to
what
player
I love
retention.
Is retention.
Yeah.
Because that is so important. Because if you're good enough to bring in talent, to evaluate and sign talent, regardless of whether it's out of high school or as a transfer, you're gonna want to be able to retain those players if they have more years of eligibility, and that is at least as important as being able to go out and grab more players. I mean, let's jump from football to baseball, for example. I mean, look at Auburn's baseball team.
Yes,
that was the most important thing for Butch Thompson and his staff to do, was retain that young talent.
Yeah, when you look at the rosters for next year in the SEC, Auburn's going to return one of the most talented rosters on any team.
Talented, experienced, yep. Yes.
Now, because of that, they weren't able to go out and sign a bunch of high-profile transfers, but they did go out and get some guys that fit certain roles and certainly boosted up their bullpen and had a lot more arms there that can help out. Just the latest on the Senate bill. According to Ross Dellinger, who's done an incredible job from Yahoo Sports of covering this, the latest text of the bill is being distributed. However, the text is not final, so they're still working through things, which tells me it's going to be really, really tough to get this done this week before they take a long break.
Yeah, because they need to get it done before the Senate breaks.
Right, at the end of this week.
Yeah,
and they have to get it introduced through cloture or whatever it's called. I don't understand the process. I've just read about it sometime soon. So,
and you've got midterm elections coming up.
Yeah. So to me, it's still a long shot.
It's a long shot, but there's a chance. But I'm saying there is a chance.
There's a chance
because of the SEC and the Big Ten. Because if they had not, come out in support of it, I think it would have just gone. You wouldn't have heard any more about it.
Yep. So it has been a long 6+ years of campaigning and spending money on Congress and visits from Sankey and the Big Ten representatives, but we're at this point now where it is close to getting on the floor, I think, still, and will it be able to push it through this week? We'll see. And that's just for the Senate, that's not the House.
So we'll keep an eye on that, but again, thank goodness we'll actually be able to talk about what coaches are saying, what players are doing, things like that. So that will all get started tomorrow. But hey, there is one other thing that we will be keeping an eye on today, and that is the Major League Baseball trading deadline.
Yeah.
Is coming to an 49 end right now. Minutes yeah. away. Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be an announcement or two after 5, but before we're done here on the show today, we should have an idea of, you know, the dust settling and where everybody is going. There have been some big deals. Obviously, the biggest, and it's no shock, the Dodgers get the prize of the trading period. Tarik Skubal, the two-time Cy Young Award winner, the best pitcher in baseball, is now a Dodger.
That's just crazy.
As they look to win their third straight World Championship. But I mean, I can't. You know, you can be upset, but the Dodgers paid more than anybody else apparently yeah. offered. I mean, the Tigers aren't idiots. They're not gonna take a lesser amount. And the Dodgers gave up two top 100 prospects and another prospect yeah. to get Skubal, who is going to start tomorrow.
You know, Casey Mize is a guy that certainly
he's
could
still
be on the move.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about that. Look, the Braves have made a couple of moves. We sat here the other day, and Justin Ferguson's as big a Braves fan as you're going to find. He's been a season ticket holder at times, and he said the Braves need a right-handed bat, and they need at least a mid-rotation starter.
Yeah.
Well, they've gotten a right-handed bat and a mid-rotation starter. Mm. I don't know how excited Braves fans right. are. Lane Thomas, who just a couple of years ago had a 28-homer season, the Braves add him, and then they pick up Todd O'Malley from the Giants, a guy that, again, 2 years ago, before an injury, was an all-star, was having a great year with the Reds before yeah. he got traded.
Something just happened. The Braves are trading outfielder Eli White to the Red Sox for right-handed pitcher Tyler Uberstein. Is that right? Uberstein?
Yeah, Uberstein, I believe.
Don't know much about him other than he's right-handed.
I was just about to pull up my MLB moves so I could run down every team. Let's see. The Braves also got Brent Suter from the Angels, a lefty reliever. Let me see what
Uberstein 0-1, 3.38 ERA. Wait, he's only pitched in one game, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, this is not that rotational guy that you would expect. I mean, the Braves have got some young guys that they could put in there, but that's been one of their problems. Yeah, he is a reliever who has just pitched in one game for the Red Sox. He's a 27-year-old who was the Red Sox 19th round pick back in 2021. So that's not a big move. I wonder if that's the precursor to something else. I mean, maybe they needed to make room for Lane Thomas so Eli White instead of just being. Maybe instead of just DFAing Eli White,
right.
they traded him for this lefty, but Malley is the guy that could move into the rotation, but yeah, I mean, I think Braves fans were hoping for a bigger name, maybe, you know, Robbie Ray, who's gone to the Padres from the Giants, Kevin Gausman, who is now a Cub, who went from the Blue Jays to the Cubs. I mean, you've seen some other pitchers go. You mentioned Casey Mize. There, you know, he's one of the more intriguing guys, because I think Casey would be very likely to take a pretty good deal to stay closer to home.
Yeah.
He's an impending free agent. He's having a good year. He's been healthy this year.
Yep.
I don't think the Braves are done. I don't think they're done. At least trying to add some right. more. But there have been some interesting deals. We'll run them down. Try to run down. Tell you what, I'll look. We can go team by team, because I know they're fans of all different teams out there, not just Braves fans. We'll do that and more as we move on. Love to hear from you. You can join us by giving us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390. It's Bill and Brian here on the Monday edition of the Drive. We'll get to our first break. Come on in and join us.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Now, more of The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive, Bill. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Got Brandon at the controls as Drew is down in Florida visiting some family, and I'm sure he's keeping up with the MLB trade deadline. Yeah. He's a big Cubs fan. Cubs have made some moves today, too. All right, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We'll recap up to now all the moves that have happened since Saturday, because that's when the huge move of Tarek Skubal to the Dodgers. The Tigers get outfielder Zaire Hope, one of the top 30 prospects in all of baseball. River Ryan, pitcher that came up and was outstanding, but is fighting his way back from injury, still a top 100 prospect. And then right-handed pitcher Brady Smith. So that is the biggest deal, obviously, of the trading period thus far. Other moves on Saturday, Luis Castillo, another coveted right-handed arm, goes from the Mariners to the White Sox. The White Sox have turned things around and have gone from the worst team in baseball just a couple of years ago to a team that is playing really well, looks like a playoff team, and they add a starter. They give up reliever Sir Anthony Dominguez, outfielder Nolan Jones, who a couple of years ago really had an outstanding year with the Rockies but has struggled since, and catcher Boston Smith. The Braves' first move came Saturday. I mentioned Lane Thomas, who had 28 homers just a couple of years ago. Right-handed hitting outfielder, crushes lefties. They pick up Lane Thomas and left-hander Bailey Falter, who was a prospect with the Phillies, went to the Pirates, has bounced around with a couple of other teams, has not really fulfilled his promise yet, but he's a left-hander who the Braves, I'm sure, will start off in AAA, and they give up a couple of prospect pitchers, right-hander Lucas Braun and left-hander Carter Holton. The Pirates looking for help in the bullpen on Saturday. They've made two trades, but their first one to get bullpen help, Camilo Duvall, who was an all-star with the Giants a couple of years ago and led the league in saves just a couple of years ago, went last year at the trade deadline to the Yankees, has not really been as good as a setup man, but the Pirates get him to try to be a right-handed guy there out of the bullpen, and the Pirates send back to the Yankees minor leaguers catcher Omar Alfonso and outfielder Luis Cruz. The Brewers have made a couple of moves. That's a team that a lot of folks thought might be in the Tarek Skubal sweepstakes, right. But they're a team that generally likes to sort of they haven't made a blockbuster. I can't recall a blockbuster deal they've made since they got CC Sabathia years ago. They usually make a move or two, and they're a team that is used to being in the playoffs. They pick up Bo Naylor, a catcher who I believe he's going to go down to the minors along with a right-handed pitcher who might help him in the bullpen, and Cody Hauer. They give up a couple of guys that have shown promise in the past. Blake Perkins was a Gold Glove winner in the outfield a couple of years ago, but he can't hit a lick. And Craig Yoho is a middle reliever. So that's not a big deal, but it's interesting. It's the Brewers are really good at evaluating talent. We'll see how that works out for them. All right, those were the Saturday moves. Yesterday, the Cubs, I mentioned, they have made a few deals. The Cubs picked up Kevin Gausman, who, I mean, man, since he discovered he worked on his splitter, and he has just been a much, much better pitcher, and has been very good in the postseason. He's 35 now, but he's the kind of guy that can really help a team as they're coming down the stretch. The Cubs give up a couple of prospects, an outfielder Brent Bateman and Ty Southesine. And so the Cubs, released Jameson Taillon. Actually, they DFA'd him and then traded him to the Blue Jays for cash and then turned around and traded those minor leaguers. So that's probably sort of like all part of the same deal. One of the bigger names that has been moved here in the trading period, Freddie Peralta, who was an all-star with the Brewers, went free agent, signed with the Mets, has not pitched well for the Mets. I wonder, you know, some guys go to New York and it's just the pressure's too much. And that's what the Rays are hoping that was the case, because Peralta, his numbers just haven't been anywhere near his career numbers this year. But he was still a guy that a lot of teams were looking for. And he goes to the Rays for three minor leaguers, three toolsy sort of minor leaguers. So we'll see if these guys turn out for the Mets. Aiden Smith's a young outfielder with power and speed. Emilian Petre is a second baseman, played at Kentucky, and has been a 300 hitter at every level in the minors, and a power right-handed pitcher in Gary Gill Hill. So the Mets look like, even though they made a little push, Mets look like they're sellers.
Right.
So that move sent Peralta away from New York to New York to the Yankees. The Yankees pick up Luis Garcia from the Washington Nationals. Garcia is a guy that has been one of the best OPS guys in the National League against right-handed pitchers. He's a left-hander that played second base up until this year, and this year they moved him to first base. And I believe he's playing first for the Yankees tonight and hitting third. The Nationals get Jake Bird, who's been around for a while, a reliever, and then some prospects: a right-hander Yovani Cruz, another right-hander, and Jack Siebert, and Ben Grable. So four pitchers. Going back to the Nats, if any of those can help them, Washington's hitting, it's crazy. A lot of people may not realize this. The Nationals have the best offense in the National League.
I did not know that.
Yeah, well, I mean, with a couple of guys that they got back in the Juan Soto deal a few years ago when they sent him to the Padres, they got C.J. Abrams, who is having an MVP year at shortstop, James Woods, who is having an MVP year in the outfield. I mean, they've got two guys that are going to be 30-30 guys that are both under 25.
Wow. That's
so,
nice.
So, yeah, I mean, they have the hitting. They've just been looking for the pitching. The Braves, I mentioned, the Braves did get a starting pitcher in Tyler Mahle from the Giants. Mahle had an up-and-down year. I believe he's pitched a little better his last few times out, but he's got an ERA of over 5. And the Braves send Anthony Molina, a guy that the Giants will either use in the bullpen or send down to AAA.
Yeah, and Uberstein, who they just got, has already been optioned to Gwinnett AAA.
Yeah, so they were just making room, I think, there for Lane Thomas. A familiar name as far as Braves fans, Huascar Brazoban, was with the Mets organization. He goes to the White Sox for a couple of minor leaguers. So those are the moves Saturday. And then today, all right, let me see if I can see if there have been any updates. Oh, yeah, man, there are a lot of moves. My goodness, there are a lot of moves today. I won't go into as much detail on all these, but there have been a lot. A couple of minor deals. Royals and Phillies swapped a couple of guys that I don't think are going to be big factors. Nolan Hoffman going from the Royals to the Phillies for Manuel Colon. The Dodgers, I think, making room on their 40-man roster. Catcher Bent Rortvedt to the Mets for a minor league reliever in Chase McDermott. The Braves get a left-handed reliever in Brent Suter from the Angels. Suter's been around for a while. He's in his mid-30s. And former top prospect for the Braves, Nacho Alvarez, goes to the Angels. Alvarez's star has sort of diminished here over the last couple of years. Let's see. This is a four-team deal. The Blue Jays, let's see. I'm trying to remember who was. All right, the Braves had Joey Bart. He goes to the White Sox. The rest of the guys in the deal, I think, are all minor leaguers. The Blue Jays get infielder Josh Smith and right-hander Josh Steffen. The Rangers get left-hander Adam Mecco. The Braves get right-hander Duncan Davitt. So, I mean, all minor leaguers involved there. The Cubs pick up a flame-throwing reliever in Ryan Zephyrhan. It's Zephyrhan. They give up one of their top prospects, Moises Ballesteros, who is a catcher in DH, and Mason McGuire. And then the that is about half of the moves from today. We'll hit the rest of the moves from today because there's some prominent players that have moved. Hey, we've still got a half an hour to go before the trade deadline and waiting for more big names. So stick with us. We'll continue updating you on that. Love to hear from you here on the Monday Drive.
To churn up some more yardage on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Yeah, how about the day before we get to spend time with Alex Golish, Joel Gordon, and DJ Durkin? I'm just talking baseball here. The first bit, but I mean, look, I'm a baseball nut. I love it. And
you've been doing fantasy baseball for how many decades now?
Four.
Wow. Yeah. And you've won it how many times? A bunch.
Most of the time.
Yeah. But
hey, this is one of the more fun days when teams, now you find out who's really in it to win it.
Right.
But there's some teams you have to respect. I was mentioning the Brewers. I mean, they're a franchise that usually doesn't go too big, but they know how to win. They're one of those mid to small market franchises that. Doesn't have the uber millions that the Dodgers, the Yankees, the Mets, and some franchises do. There have been a lot of moves today. I can't find a list just team by team of what everybody's done, who they've gotten. I've just got
by day, which
yeah,
makes it
what's gone confusing. On by day. Here are some of the highlights for today. I mean, there have been a few. I'm going to skip some of these because they're not. They may end up being pretty decent pieces, but all right, let me just see if I can scan through here and tell you what teams. All right, the Red Sox and Yankees and at least a couple of other teams were looking for a catcher. Adley Rutschman goes from the Orioles to the Red Sox for a haul of minor leaguers and Carlos Narvaez, who can at least play catcher for the Orioles. The Phillies have looked for help both offensively and in the bullpen. They get Luis Arraez and Caleb Killian from the Giants. Killian's been the Giants' closer. Arraez, of course, is a two-time National League batting champ who's leading the league again this year, hitting .324. It's going to make things really interesting for the Phillies as Arraez played first base for the Padres last year because his defense at second had been questioned. He goes to the Giants. Ron Washington, who has long been one of the more highly touted defensive coaches in Major League Baseball, worked with him. And Arraez has become this year, all the metrics say he is a good defensive second baseman. So he wanted to stay at second base. He's going to go to Philadelphia and play second. They're going to move second baseman Bryson Stott to third base, move third baseman Alec Bohm to first base, and move Bryce Harper back to the outfield.
Right.
So three guys are going to get bumped around, but it's going to help their batting. It's going to help their batting order quite a bit. The Phils also, looking for pitchers, picked up left-handed reliever Brooks Raley from the Mets for a couple of minor leaguers. All right, I mentioned the Cubs. The Cubs have gotten Braxton Garrett, who had a good year with the good couple of years with the Marlins, but he's been hurt for the last couple of years. They pick him up. He's somebody that could go into the rotation. Mentioned they'd already gotten Kevin Gausman. I believe, let's see, I'm having a look at two or three different places to see. I was thinking that they had made another deal as well, but no, I haven't seen that. But no, speaking of the Giants look like they're trading the lefty, their top lefty in the bullpen. Killian was the top righty in the bullpen. Eric Miller's their top lefty in the bullpen. So the Giants have already traded Robbie Ray to the Padres, Tyler Mahle to the Braves, Caleb Killian to the Cubs, yeah. And now Eric Miller looks like he's going to the Red Sox. So the Red Sox have picked up starting catcher Adley Rutschman and a left-hander, young left-handed reliever who is really talented. Still no Casey Mize deal. The Giants may trade another hitter or two. Elliot Ramos is being talked about as a possibility to the Yankees. Let me see if there's any other big moves. I mentioned the Robbie Ray deal from the Giants to the Padres. Oh, Joe Adell, the Angels trading him. I mean, he's been a guy that crushes lefties. He goes to the Guardians for catcher Jacob Cozart. The Cubs did add a couple more from the Mets. They get Clay Holmes and Tyrone Taylor. So that'll give him a right-hander who could start or pitch out of the bullpen. Taylor's a guy that lately has really been hitting the ball well for the Mets. And the Cubs give up their top prospect. Jefferson Rojas is a middle infielder, one of their top prospects there. And then the Marlins, in a bit of a surprising deal, they trade Liam Hicks, who's really been a find for them, catcher that has hit the ball very well, but he's behind one of the top prospects that the Marlins have. So he goes stays in state from Miami to Tampa. Goes to them for three minor leaguers. And then a couple of other trades of note. The Brewers, I mentioned, they're a team that doesn't seem to play with the superstars, but they pick up a couple of nice arms from the Cardinals in Dustin May, who used to be with the Dodgers, and JoJo Romero, and they give up a couple of minor leaguers there. And then the Pirates, I mentioned, they were looking for bullpen help. They got Camilo Duvall yesterday. They got Luke Weaver from the Mets today. For a minor league shortstop, so there's still some more moves. We'll sort of ease back off and hit you if there is a big move here in the next 30 minutes. Even though the trading deadline is supposed to end in 20, all that means is the paperwork has to be turned in to Major League Baseball by 5. Right. Sometimes it's not released until a little after. So yeah, fun day for baseball fans. But yeah, if you're a Braves fan, how do you feel? Just okay, yeah. I think, to right now. You still sort of hold out hope that a Casey Mize or somebody like that.
Right, somebody big in the rotation.
The Alex Anthopoulos has a knack of being able to pull some deals right at the last minute, so we will see if he's able to do that. All right, 334-321-1390. We'll hit some highlights as we move on through, but since it's the day before reporting day, definitely want to talk a little Auburn football and get Brian's thoughts on some of the things that he'll be looking for and that fans should be sort of on the lookout for as we head into the first day of practice on Wednesday.
That sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No. No. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll get to our final break here a little early.
Okay.
And that way we can transition from baseball to football. Yeah. I was going to warn you. That's what we'll get into when we come back. So we'll do that, and we'll open up the phone lines again. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 as we continue here with the Monday Drive.
The Drive continues. Continues. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. And B-Matt, it's the talking and you know every, the the fill season is just about over. We're about to have some actual news.
Yes, we will talk to Coach Golish, OC Joel Gordon, DC DJ Durkin tomorrow. Wednesday, the opening practice will be out there at early in the morning. Well, not too early, but in the morning. And we'll also be out there to watch practice on Thursday and on Saturday. So that's three viewing windows. That means three photo galleries, three videos, hopefully, from those. And we'll talk to Golish again on Thursday, and we'll talk to Cody Burns on Saturday, which will be great.
Yeah, and as I understand it, I mean, I love this. Everything I've heard is we're going to get opportunities when we get an assistant coach, we're going to get his players.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense.
That makes so much more sense than sometimes getting a D lineman, an O lineman, a running back, and a receiver, which is great when you get them, but you have no idea. This way, if you know what coach you're getting, you got a pretty good idea the players you're going to get, and you can ask more of the same type questions. You don't have to be like, you know, bouncing all around and waiting for a few days and hoping you get somebody else at that position or his coach at some time. And it's also so much better for us getting coaches one at a time.
Yeah.
And not have to be in a room where here's all the offensive staff or all the defensive staff. And, you know, we may not
get to get all of them.
Yeah,
right.
That's right.
It's possible. So, yes.
So, again, another tip of the hat to Alex Golish and the way he's handling things.
You know, and as far as guys that I will be looking at early in camp, and of course, the first part of camp is shorts, you know,
sure.
No pads.
Just first, yeah. The good thing is, man, they're in pads Saturday.
Yeah. But, you know, you want to see Stanton Ramo out there and see how he's looking, how he's moving, you know.
I think he is one of the key players for Auburn this fall.
This staff is counting on him and made an investment in him as a starting left tackle. They knew he would have to, you know, work back from some injuries, which he has. But now's his opportunity to get into playing shape, to, you know, get back into, you know, the groove of it and see if he can, you know, win that job outright and be that guy that Auburn thinks he can be. So this is a really big 4 weeks for him. And so I'll be taking an early look at him. And, you know, it's more about the skilled guys, I guess, kind of early on because, you know, the big guys can't really – lean on each other too much or pop each other, but I'll be excited to see what some of the freshmen look like. Sean Spencer was a real standout. Brian Williams, also another freshman receiver in the spring. So I just want to see how much they've changed, what they look like after
I'm sort of looking forward to seeing Sam Turner again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, here's a guy that sort of gets, you know, you hear about the freshmen, you hear about the guys that have transferred in. You don't hear much about him.
Nope.
He was very impressive when we saw him last year as a freshman, and then we'll see. I mean,
yeah, had that injury that really cut short that year.
I mean,
year.
Alex Golish said six at least.
Yep.
They want, you know, want to have six guys in the rotation.
I think he has an uphill climb, I think, to get into that top six.
I agree.
A pretty long up, but he could possibly make a move. That's just a guy to keep an eye on. You don't know what's going to happen in fall camp.
Yeah, there is always a player or two who you didn't have pegged as being a contributor who steps it up.
Yep.
And this is a perfect time from that freshman to the sophomore year.
Yep. And then cornerback is another position I think
you're absolutely
really
right.
Wide open.
You got it. Auburn's got to find another piece or two back there.
Yeah, I know Andre Jordan was probably the best cornerback, the UCLA transfer. He's a senior, you know, a lot of experience. But you've got so many first-year players, young guys. Kamari Todd was a starter at Chattanooga as a freshman, transferred over. He's an interesting one to watch. Gavin Jenkins transferred over from USF after 1 year. Another guy that could push to be in that top rotation, Blake Woodby, had a decent year as a freshman at Auburn last year and, you know, was highly recruited. Can he step up and be a special guy? Shamar Ano, a guy Auburn recruited really hard, went to Florida State for a year, and now he's back at Auburn. So these are guys that maybe we didn't see a whole lot of. Scott Richardson, another transfer from Notre Dame, who's more of an athlete, transitioned to cornerback.
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, what one or two of that group of players can step up and be in the top, you know, rotation there?
Well, you need to have at least four.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you feel like, Andre Jordan and Rashawn Pleasant are your most likely starters. Yep. But you need at least two more out of that group that you were just talking about.
Yep, and even though we just talked to him, I want to see Champ Anthony back out there. You know, he's been injured.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He's such an important player. you can usually hear him when he's out there, right? Because he's working hard and he's coaching up his teammates. He's he's going to be a future coach. There's no question in my mind that he's going to be a coach of some, whether it's high school, college, or pros. I just think he has that in him. And then Alex McPherson. I'm excited to see him out there. He looks so much healthier when I saw him.
Oh yeah, no kidding.
Just looked great down in Tampa, and I'm excited to see what he can do out there. I want to see him hit a couple of 60-yarders or something close to it when we first go out there, because usually we'll see the kickers out there pretty early.
I'm also – I mean, you're talking about skilled players. I mean, that running back room is deep, and there are going to be opportunities for more than Jeremiah Cobb, but I don't know that you can get five.
No.
I don't know that you can play five, but I think three, maybe four. And it'll be really interesting to see the battles. And I still am really I've just been really impressed by everything we've heard about Omar Mabson.
Yep. I was going to mention him first, too, because I'm excited about him.
I mean, here's a guy that ought to be just entering college now.
Yep.
And he's done enough to impress this staff that he was one of the first guys they mentioned out there this spring. Talked about him being your best pass protector.
And I can go back to talking to him, I think, before his junior year of high school, and looking at him then and seeing him in the spring and wondering what he looks like now. That young man has put in a lot of work, and I'm excited to see what he looks like out there. You know, kind of the look test for some of these players going through, and he's one that you imagine probably looks pretty good out there just running around. So I think he could absolutely be the key backup to Jeremiah Cobb, and you know, who knows what's going to happen as the season goes on at that position where you can get banged up fairly easily. A lot of depth there, too.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, there are quite a few spots. And the defense is loaded with a bunch of young guys, a bunch of second-year guys.
I mean, seeing them in shorts and just shirts is not a big deal. But as the camp goes on, you want to see exactly what this D-line looks like. You want to see what Jared Smith looks like, especially going up against these offensive linemen. Is he going to be an impact player this year? Auburn needs somebody out of the edge position to be that. And then how is the defensive line going to shape up? Because, you know, you feel good about the transfer from Cody Sigler. You feel great about him.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
You feel really good about Dallas Walker coming back there at the nose guard, but – you need to play five or more players in that interior defensive line.
Then you've got a bunch
line.
Of young guys.
Yep.
I mean, you've got the true sophomores that have been at Auburn, the class of 25
Malik
guys.
Malik Darian Smith, two big guys there.
And who's the third one? There's
Tavian Branch, true freshman, could be a guy that steps up. He's one to watch really, really closely. St. Ferrier transferred from App State, probably a nose guard type there.
Walter Mathis is a transfer from LSU.
Yep, another guy to watch.
Years. Yep. Yep.
So they got some dudes there. It's just a matter of what order they're going to be in.
Yeah, and like you said, they've got to get a pass rush. It's got to come from somewhere. I mean, we want to find out exactly. Jordan Crawford's the other guy. I knew there was another guy.
Yeah,
there on the defensive line, but
Jordan just a sophomore, probably going to be more of a nose guard, but I think he might have the quickness to slide. I don't know. Probably a nose guard. But yes, and I think Darian Smith is a guy, even though he's undersized, is still going to play a lot.
Oh, he had such a burst.
Yeah.
He was a guy that was able to get in the backfield a lot from the defensive tackle spot. He's a guy I think that could play inside or out.
Yep, and we're going to see him a lot on third down and passing situations for sure. So he's one to watch there, of course. So, linebacker wise, you talked about pass rush. I think DJ Durkin is going to generate a lot of pass rush from those guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Xavier Atkins had a bunch of sacks and tackles for loss last year.
I'm really excited to see a healthy DeMarcus Riddick.
Right, absolutely. He's another guy coming back from an injury you want to watch. But I think guys like Elijah Melendez, Bryce Diaz, and
X.
Yeah, will be even more involved in that pass rush and generating more of those negative plays that can be so impactful for the defense and for the team overall.
And then we will we'll wait a little bit. I believe Deshaun Womack's court date is maybe next week. Yeah, I believe it's next week.
Yeah.
So that's what they're waiting on. I mean, he'll be out there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And working, because he's a guy that, I mean, I think they're expecting to be a factor for them, too, as far as putting pressure on the quarterback.
He could be the starting DN, right? The big guy who mm-hmm. you want to set the edge kind of steps in for Keldrick Falk, you know, that guy. So we'll see if he can step up and do that and, you know, take care of business on and off the field, obviously. It'd be important for him.
Yeah, so there's just some of the names. I mean, there's a lot for us to be keeping up with. Really looking forward to being out there on Wednesday morning. We'll get that Wednesday, Thursday, and Saturday, and we'll tell you about that here. And Brian, of course, man, there will be you guys will have tons of video and eyes on practice.
Yes, we will. And looking forward to it. You know, it's I think my 26th year covering it. You know, I can remember the first day I was out there in August with Don Dunn and those guys. A little bit different now the way things go, but still great memories and looking forward to doing it
one
more time.
Thank goodness we're not on those intramural fields.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
All right, we're about halfway done. There have been a few more moves in baseball. Nothing shocking that has been announced yet, but we'll see about that on the other side. It's Monday, so we'll have Brian's Monday Musings also coming up in hour number two. And love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline. Come on in and join us in hour number two of the Monday Drive.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Hope everybody had a good weekend. It was we got a little rain over the weekend. It was a little cooler.
I remember I stepped out. I think it was Saturday night after the rain. And there was like this cool breeze. It felt like fall for just about 15 minutes.
Yeah. Wherever we were, somebody said exactly the same thing.
Now that probably won't feel like that again for another month. But
no,
still,
you're right about that. It was a tease. Nice. I was thinking, that's a way to tease the football players that are going to get out there and start practice. Because I was looking, it's going to be in the 90s. It's going to be in the 90s, August. Just in time for the for practice here. Yeah, it is August now. Welcome to August, and it was crazy. August got started with a little cooler weather. It's not going to stick around, though.
Nope.
Yep. We're here for another hour on the Monday Drive. Bill and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. We've got Brandon at controls as Drew is taking a little break here as, the summer terms are done. I guess finals wrapping up, but classes are all done, so it is that time. It's also, it's busier than I remember at this time of year, I guess, because leases must start August 1st. Because there are a ton of people moving stuff around. I'm seeing an awful lot of the, U-Hauls and rentals and moving vans and things like that.
Well, I know they got sorority rush cranking up here fairly soon.
That is right.
So
classes are in 2 weeks, so that means rush is next week. So, yes, there are more people in town than you might think, but it is the last sort of little break. And as we were talking about, football preseason practice gets officially underway Wednesday. I know at both Auburn and Alabama, tomorrow is the report date. Wednesday is the first day of practice. And as Brian was saying, we're going to get plenty of opportunities here in the first week to watch some practice and talk to players and coaches. We get head coach Alex Golish and both the coordinators, Joel Gordon and DJ Durkin, tomorrow. Then we'll have a viewing window and get some players on Wednesday. We get another viewing window and Coach Golish on Thursday. And then after a Friday walkthrough day where there's no media access, Saturday, first day in pads, we'll get a viewing window and we'll get Cody Burns and some of his receivers. So,
how about that?
Yeah, so a fun first week. We'd love to hear from you. If you've got any players that you sort of think would be, you'd like us to keep an eye on. Do you have a?
I thought of another one.
All right.
Tight end room.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
Yeah.
So Jonathan Echols was banged up, in the spring, transferred from USF. And I think, if you hear Coach Golish and those guys talk about him, they have a high regard of his potential.
Mm-hmm.
But they also talk about all the things he needs to get done to reach that. And
right.
They feel like injuries have really held back his development. But so this will be a big, big fall for him. I think he's one of a large group of newcomers at the position that have a chance to push for a top two spot. I do think that
Jake Johnson.
Yeah, Jake Johnson, the Texas A&M / North Carolina transfer.
If he's healthy, right. I mean, he's a guy that can stretch the field.
Yeah.
Auburn got to see that in person a couple of years ago at Texas A&M when his brother came in and kept throwing the ball to him.
Yes, I did. So he definitely has a chance to, or he probably is number one certainly going into that. But that's a position where you need depth.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys take a lot of knocks during the season. That tight end position, you're going against tackles, you're going against linebackers. You just get knocked around pretty good, and they're going to need depth there. So I think Echols is a really important player in that group. And
Trey Newsom's another one. I mean, Alex Golish seemed pretty. He seemed to sort of light up. I mean, of course, tight ends that's a position that he used to coach,
right?
And he really thinks a lot of that position in his offense. But he seemed pretty pumped about his tight ends.
He did.
When he talked with you guys down in Tampa.
And Arliss Boardingham, another guy that was banged up.
Oh, yes,
up in
indeed.
The
there's a guy that, at Florida, I mean, he was a very, very highly thought of prospect.
I think injuries held him back at Bowling Green last year. And, he's a guy that I'm sure is looking to have, a bounce back year for Auburn. And Auburn would certainly love to see that from him.
Oh, yeah. So it's going to be fun. I do think. Brian, I think this team has got pretty solid depth as you look across the roster, and that's hard to imagine when you had as many big names leave and you had to go out in the portal and bring a lot of players in. I mean, with nearly 60 new faces on this roster, I think they did a remarkable job of filling holes and building depth with it not all being in one-year guys.
Yeah, they did a great job of bringing in transfers, and now with the five-year rule even more, but with multiple years, many of them more than 2 years eligibility, which I think is important for Alex Golish and his staff as they build this team going forward. If I looked at this, going by positions, I would say the only position that maybe doesn't have as much depth as you'd want is that defensive end edge position. I think they've got six total guys there for a position where, you're going to rotate a bunch of players. You can get nicked up and banged up going up against big old tackles, and you can get tired pass rushing a guy if he's going to throw 30 or 40 times a night. So if that's maybe an area that they need more guys to step up at, or if anything was to come to pass, if they had room for one more guy, that would be where I would look to add him.
Well, I mean, they were able to get Chris, Chris Murray gets an extra year of eligibility there toward the end of spring, and now he's had an entire summer to try to get back into playing football shape. I'm really interested to see how Jaquez Wilkes, the true freshman.
He's going to have to play some part.
I believe so, too. And then we were talking about linebackers. We mentioned DeMarcus Riddick a while ago. I think somebody like that could get some work there on the outside because of his ability. And I think they've got a couple of other guys there at linebacker that could figure in there and help out there on the edge as well.
Also, I'm excited about Joe Phillips because
man, he's a guy that stuck with it. I think a lot of folks, expected him he hadn't gotten that opportunity, so maybe he'd be somewhere else this fall.
Yeah, and when you barely play a snap your first 2 years at a school like Auburn, a lot of people, including me, are looking at you and thinking, yeah, you're probably going to transfer out and try to find somewhere you can play, maybe go down a level or two and get that playing time and then, jump back up after a good season. But Joe is sticking with it, and I feel like it paid off because I heard the coaches mention his name a few times during the spring as a guy who's taking a step forward there. I really like Coleman Hutzler, the defensive end / edge coach they brought in. A lot of experience, a lot of energy. I think he's really going to help that room out a lot. I think he's a heck of a coach. So I'm excited to see what a guy like Joe Phillips can do. I don't think anybody thinks he's going to be a starter. Maybe he will do that, but just to get in that rotation and be a part of it. You can go back 3 years ago, which he was one of the top players in the state of Alabama.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Georgia. Auburn, remember, Georgia really was pushing for him.
Yeah, Auburn won a big recruiting battle against Georgia, against him. Just a terrific athlete who's put on some weight and has sort of learned to play with that weight. I think he's more of a linebacker in high school, so now he's learned to play more on the edge. So that is an adjustment period. He's gone through that now, so I'm excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, so I mean, it's gonna be fun fall. I mean, and I expect it to be a pretty physical fall from the way Alex Golish is talking about finding out who they can count on.
It has to be, and I wrote about this this morning. I think the number one thing this team needs to work on or needs to continue to evolve forward in is physical and mental toughness, because this team has just not had it over the last several years. Right, they just haven't. I mean, and you can see it, right? You can see it with your own eyes.
Oh, yes. It doesn't
take, and you know, that's especially clear when you get to fourth quarters.
Yeah. Oh, they're absolutely.
They just fall apart, and that's their mental side of it, obviously. But physically too, they would get worn down and would not be able to, execute. And I think this has been a tougher off season for those guys, and I think this will be a tougher fall camp. And I think that's by design. I think that's the type of team Alex Golish wants, and I think that's the type of team that Auburn needs.
Yeah, so that should make it even more interesting. There are battles for positions. It's funny. There are battles for starting spots, but there are battles for some of them. It's not so much about starting. I would say at most positions, except for the offensive line,
right.
You need to have more than just a starter. I mean, in the offensive line, you need more than just a starter, but you need to know your starting five on the offensive line. And that's the critical thing, and that's why you were mentioned Stanton Ramil a while ago. If he can slot in at a tackle,
right,
then you feel like the pieces pretty much fall in place on the offensive line.
Then you're just trying to find the other guard who is going to start, and
you've got so many
four
candidates.
Or five guys who could slot in there. Backup centers, Ty Buster could be a backup tackle or starting right tackle or a starting guard. I think he has that potential. Jacoby Ward, another second year guy who's returning, could be that, and even Kyle Ellis.
Yeah, Kyle Ellis. Although you would think maybe he just since he was forced to play as a true freshman last year, that he spends this year as the backup to Cole Best, and is ready to step in as your starting center next year.
And he did do that most of the spring. But if he becomes one of the best five players on the offensive line, you've got to get him over to guard.
Well, or if he's one of the best seven or eight.
Right.
I mean, because that's what you really need. You need, if you had seven or eight guys and a couple of them are versatile enough to be able to play either side or guard or tackle, something like that, that way you're going to have somebody that goes down at some point. Hopefully it's not for a long term.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think it was Ferg the other day was talking about the fact that he went back and looked in as far back as he could determine. Auburn had not started the same five offensive linemen in over 20 years. It had been over 20 years since they went game 1 to game 12 starting the same offensive line.
And looking back to 2010, I think it was close that year. And there was a reason they were right.
That's exactly right. But that's right.
I don't remember exactly how it went down game to game, but I know it was close for those five guys.
But you've got to know, I mean, it's great if somebody goes down that you can put your next best player in there at some point and maybe have to shift guys around.
Absolutely. No doubt.
Yeah, so that will be really interesting to watch, but the battles for the battles for playing time, I think, are what are going to be really interesting. You mentioned corners a while ago, receivers. Auburn needs multiple players to be able to play, and you're going to have them as the season goes on. You can't get by with just three wide receivers and two corners.
No, and I think they've got some depth at receiver, even though some of it's not really proven, especially in the SEC. And we'll see at cornerback. You want to see that depth sort of develop starting this fall, really. Didn't see enough of that, I don't think, in the spring. But that doesn't mean they don't have players there. They just need to I think a lot of them transferring in, a lot of new faces there. They have to transition to DJ Durkin's defense and what he asked for. And they should be through that by now, and now we get to see them really compete for those spots.
Yeah, I mean, and that is one – I mean, it's funny – You make a head coaching change, and generally there's gonna be a lot of disruption and not a lot of continuity. But with Alex Golish being able to bring in a dozen offensive players that played under his system,
right,
with their offensive coordinator, with their offensive line coach, with their wide receiver coach. There's a lot. There's so much more continuity and carryover than you would expect. And then you bring back DJ Durkin, and so many players, especially the sophomore class, that played significant roles as true freshmen last year, that their understanding is way ahead of what you normally have when you have a new head coach.
And really the only position where there's not a lot of that is cornerback, because you got five newcomers. And then offensive line, of course, 14 newcomers, but you got a couple of those from USF. And so it'll be interesting to see at that cornerback position. But I do think that's big for the offense. I do think, you know, having Durkin back, having all these offensive players come from USF, I think that's a reason why Auburn could overachieve this season rather than underachieve. I think that's one of the reasons, if they do have a better season than people expect. And I'm expecting 7-5 at the best at the moment. But if they
I'm
are
not expecting
that,
7-5 at the best. I'm expecting, look, Auburn should have won at least seven games for the last 3 years. I mean, they should have. They've been good enough to. It hasn't been because of a lack of talent. It's been because the talent hasn't been used in the best way possible.
Right.
There's been a break or two that's gone against them.
Yeah.
But there have also been some things that they haven't done as well as they should have. I don't think there's any reason not to expect a better result than we've seen over the last few years. And that would be 500 or better.
Yeah.
So that's 6-6 or 7-5. But I don't think at best.
Well, for my at best. Other people are going to have, especially in the preseason, bigger at best. One other thing to keep in mind is with the 9-game SEC schedule, it's not getting easier.
No, you're right about that. But Auburn's had one of the tougher SEC schedules for years.
They have.
All it's done now is made everybody else's to be more comparable to what Auburn's is.
Yep.
Auburn's got a difficult schedule. They have to go on the road to Tennessee, Ole Miss, Alabama, and Georgia.
Yeah,
as well as Mississippi State.
Yep.
But four teams that a lot of people feel like have a pretty good shot of being playoff teams.
Yeah.
In the first four that I mentioned. Auburn has gone toe to toe with those teams for the most part over the last couple of years. Now, not always on the road, but
they have. But if you look at the schedule, and this is interesting to me, because
I like what's going on the week before they play some of these teams.
But they need to go 4-0 in September. But in
absolutely
order to do that, they've got to beat Florida at home,
and right now they're an underdog.
Yep, and then they got to beat Vanderbilt at home. And I know Vanderbilt's going to have a new quarterback, blah blah blah. But still,
yeah, because Diego Pavia shouldn't get another year.
Yeah, I don't think
shouldn't
he is.
Get another year, even though he's been cut. And we're seeing players come back from the NFL.
Right. But even if you go 4-0 September, there's a possibility you're 4-4 by the end of October. That's because three of those games were on the road: Tennessee, Georgia, Ole Miss, which
October
Auburn will be an underdog.
October is brutal.
And
there's
then
no
your
doubt.
Only home game is a 11 a.m. game against LSU. And I don't know who will be the favorite in that team. I think LSU probably
LSU will be the favorite because of the expectations for Lane. But, neither team's excited about that being 11 o'clock, I can tell you that.
Yeah, no doubt. And then, November, you got Arkansas at home, you got Mississippi State on the road, Samford at home, and then, of course, on the road at Alabama, which I'm going to preview Alabama for tomorrow morning. It's my final little summer preview thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just surprised. Looking at the All-SEC teams, they've only got one first-team offense, one first-team defense. When have we seen that? I don't remember how they.
No, you're right. Well, when have you seen Alabama pick sixth? Of course, it's a 16-team league, but that still would be barely in the upper half. I mean, and Alabama is usually picked in the top three.
And I wouldn't
and
pick
that's
Auburn.
Disappointing to them if they're picked below one.
I wouldn't pick Auburn to win there for the first time since 2010, but still, maybe make at least a decent game. We'll see. But you've got to maybe pick up a win at Mississippi State or. Make sure you beat Florida and Vanderbilt and Arkansas at home. I mean, there's still a fine line between 7-5 and 5-7.
Oh, no doubt.
If things don't go right.
I mean, look, and for Auburn, 7-5 would be an improvement. I don't think I was on with Doug earlier today on the Max Roundtable, and I didn't disagree with him. I mean, 7-5 isn't going to get anybody, doing backflips or anything, but it's definitely an improvement.
It is.
And I said, depending on how the 7-5 works out. Although Auburn folks are also tired of almost.
Yeah, they are.
You know, it's not, it ain't horseshoes. It's football, and you need wins. You need to, you know, Auburn needs to win a big game or two at home. They need to protect the home field better than they have the last few years.
Florida would be a great way.
Florida is the critical game for me. Yes. I mean, first of all, look, you got to win the first two.
Yes.
You can't be thinking Florida and screw up against Baylor or Southern Miss. But I mean, look, you get Florida coming in on a Saturday night at Jordan-Hare Stadium. Yep. That used to be
death.
Absolutely.
There have been number one Floridas that have come to Jordan-Hare in a similar situation, got their tails whipped. Yep.
And look, Florida, it'll be Florida's first road game. Yep. It'll be their first test. I mean, my goodness, they got Florida Atlantic and Campbell the first two games. And so they go on the road, and I know there are a lot of folks down in Tampa who are really excited about Florida's offense.
Right.
You know, with bringing in Georgia Tech's offensive coordinator, and he's bringing in their backup who had a really good game in his only start. Right. But it came against Gardner-Webb.
Exactly.
All right, so look, this is going to be his first SEC game.
On the road at
night. And his first road game at night. Auburn has to win this game.
They do.
Auburn has to win the Florida game.
Because if you don't,
you ain't getting to.
You're looking at 3-5 going in November?
Yeah, very likely. Right? If you beat Vandy.
Yeah.
I mean, if you lose to Florida, there's no guarantee the next week against Vandy. I mean, you have to beat Florida.
Yep.
You do that one. If you come out of September 4-0, then you're feeling pretty good.
You've got confidence.
And you've I think you've got a shot. When you look, Tennessee's got Texas the week before Auburn goes to Knoxville.
Georgia's got
Bama the week before.
Night game. Yep.
And then Ole Miss has got Texas.
And Auburn's got
the week before Auburn goes there.
For Georgia. Right.
So, I mean, you've got some things going for you. And if you can pull off one of those, you can pull off one of those on the road and go 2-2 in October.
That would be a miracle, as far as I'm concerned. But
I mean, really, but it's you beat Florida and Vandy, I think there's a chance that you can win one of those games on the road. You're 6-2 going into November with a pretty darn good looking November for Auburn.
Then you're feeling much, much better.
Oh yeah,
feeling great.
Then you're thinking this team's got a chance. Yeah. This team's got a chance to be 8-3 going to Tuscaloosa.
Right,
but. Again, it all gets back to taking care of business in September.
It does.
Oh, man, we have not taken our first break here in hour number two. Yeah, we need to do that. Don't forget, Monday Musings coming up. During the break, I'm going to check and see if there were any last-minute baseball trades that we missed. Hey, we'd love for you to join us as we continue here with the Monday Drive.
War Eagle, this is Coach Larry Vickers, and you're listening to ESPN 106.7. Auburn Opelika's sports leader and home of Auburn women's basketball.
This is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Monday afternoon. Well, we had Brett. I thought Brett was I know Dan's not here, but Brett is fully allowed to gloat and celebrate the addition of Scooble to the Dodgers. That is the biggest. And Casey Mize did indeed get traded at the last minute. The Tigers trade Casey to the San Diego Padres, so he goes to the National League, and he goes for let me see exactly the players came back. Let's see. Gage Workman, also going to the Padres from the Tigers. The Tigers get a left-handed pitching prospect, Cash Mayfield, and lefty Jackson Wolf. So I will need to see. I don't think those were like near at the top of the Padres prospects. So I know Casey's a free agent, but still, it just seems like the Braves would have had the pieces, and to be able to trade
and possibly keep him too. So
I mean, Casey will be a free agent, so we'll see. I mean, San Diego's not the worst place in the world.
No, it's not. he might fall in love with it out there. Wednesday. You never know.
Yeah. So that's one of the bigger moves here at the very end of the trading period. I mean, there were a few other moves. I'm looking for Pirates picked up a couple more relievers as they really try to help their bullpen. The Reds trade Nate Lowe to the Guardians. The Cardinals are definitely in selling mode, traded Lars Nootbaar to the Diamondbacks. But I don't see any more big moves there. Foster Griffin, who's had a great year in his first year with the Nationals, is now a Guardian. But that's pretty much it as far as the moves there at the deadline. So the Braves will be done adding Lane Thomas and Tyler Mahle. They needed somebody to try to add into the rotation and a right-handed bat, and that's who they get. Maybe they turn out great, but definitely not the splash kind of moves that I think Braves fans were hoping for.
Not at all. So onward we march, probably to the division round of the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is, you need more pitching.
Yeah,
you're going to need more pitching if you're going to go deep. I mean, because the Braves have just had so many injuries. When it looks like Spencer Strider's not coming back this year. Schwellenbach hopefully is going to be back at some point. Smith Shawver, I mean, but I mean, injuries, that has been the biggest problem for the Braves, who got off to that great start and then just they've been okay for the last month or so. I mean, they got out such a great start. They're going to make the playoffs. But you see, especially, it stinks for the Braves to see the Dodgers doing what they're doing, but see the Phillies adding to the players they have, and the Phillies have really improved after a terrible, terrible start since Donnie Baseball's been their manager.
If the Braves could get beat by somebody other than the Phillies in the playoffs, that'd be great. For me, I'd really like that.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Monday musings on the other side. So stick with us as we head into the final half hour here on the Monday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 25 minutes or so here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, and it's Monday, and one of the things we always look forward to, it's great having Brian in on Mondays. Look, it works really well throughout the athletic year to sort of be able to come in and recap the weekend with everything, but as sort of like a cherry on top, it's Brian always has his Monday musings for us each day, and I do my best not to check that. Look, I've been concentrating on
baseball.
There you
go, baseball.
Baseball
that's right,
the day.
That's right. Well, if you know this one, I might have to wonder, because this is one I wouldn't know.
Oh, well, I'm sure I don't know it if you don't know it.
No. Well, you know a lot more than I do, but well, this is a young person, so it's kind of tough.
Yeah, then I'm toast. Yeah. All right. So how far are we going back?
Okay, we are going back. Let me pull it up. We did talk about some things I wrote about.
Mental
and physical
toughness. Before we get into music, musings, the athletic thoughts.
Yeah, I wrote about needing more mental and physical toughness. I think that's, it's an ambiguous thing in some ways, but it's something that Auburn's really lacked the last 5 years during this losing streak. So, and I think that's something Al Scholes really puts a high priority on. So we'll see what it looks like. But I think that'll be a part of fall camp for sure. I talked about the bill, the Protect College Sports Act, which sort of got its, was saved at the last minute there last week, and is now, I think, close to going to the Senate floor, although, who knows? Every tweet seems to say something a little bit different, so we'll see how that works out. And then I wrote about Tennessee linebacker Aaron Carter, who was suspended for two games. It was actually three, and then reduced to two on appeal.
Yeah, that is just ridiculous.
For a $427 flight that his agent paid after he declared for the draft. And then, I guess, a foot injury he had. They decided to have surgery, so he returned to school. He paid back the $427 that his agent had paid. This is the same agent, of course, that helped him negotiate with Tennessee.
Right.
And, I mean, no harm was done, right? No advantage was gained in any way, shape, or form for him or his or Tennessee. And for whatever reason, the NCAA decided to stick him for a two-game ban. So I thought that was silly. And then Monday musings. Okay. We're going back 17 years. So this is 2009.
Nine?
Yep.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm in trouble.
But I think there are some young people that might get this.
Well, I'm sure there are. I mean, it's not like you're going to go with some obscure somebody that nobody's ever heard of that hasn't sold any records.
Anybody under, say, 28, 30 who's into popular music probably knows this one. All right, 17 years ago, 2009, a 10-year-old posted her first video singing a cover of one of her favorite musical artists, 14 years before opening for that artist on the highest grossing tour of all time. You could probably guess.
Well, I'm
going to
guess who the artist is. Taylor.
That's right.
Okay.
And there is Toro.
That's about as far as I'm going to get.
Taylor Swift. She was one of the artists that opened on.
Well, I guarantee you that daughter-in-law and son probably know, as they went over to Amsterdam and saw Taylor's tour.
Okay.
There.
Okay, that's great. Well, Eras Tour over $2 billion grossed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. And that is a record. So this is Sabrina Carpenter. She and you can find that video of her as a 10-year-old singing this song. It's just incredible to me, and she's really good.
Yeah. Well, I've heard of her.
And now she's, I guess, one of the top pop artists in the world now. I don't know. I'm not, I listen to 70s, 80s stuff, so I don't know, but listening to her, she's really, really talented, really good. Opened up for Taylor Swift on the tours. Had a couple of number ones already as a young person below 30. Had a couple of other hit songs. Espresso might be one of the songs you've heard, or if you heard it now, you might recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
Just hearing the background of different things. And just really talented. And if you listen to her lyrics, someone can be really funny. What's that one song? I'll think of it in a minute, but really funny lyrics. Man Child, really funny lyrics to that one. She's already won two Grammy Awards also, so she's well on her way to being, one of the next greats, whatever.
That's pretty amazing, though. That's pretty amazing to come from, from there as a 10-year-old to a superstardom.
And she was in, I think it was Disney, A Girl Meets World. She was starred on that show for about 3 years. Her dad built her a home studio when she was the same age, 10, and she wanted to be all purple because that was her favorite color at the time. So just a lot of unique stuff. From Quakertown, Pennsylvania, Taylor Swift also from Pennsylvania. So a lot of talent coming out of a lot of singing talent coming out of the state of Pennsylvania.
Used to be quarterbacks.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So. But it was fun to learn a little bit about a younger person, and I really enjoyed listening to your music too. Really talented.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've heard of her. I just didn't know that. I didn't know the whole story there. So that's cool. Yeah, Brian, it's crazy. Brian's gone back centuries.
Yep.
And he's in keeping these. He can go just recent.
We've had haunted hotels. Yeah.
Yeah.
Never know.
So what was the date? Is this what? So 17 years ago is when she
put out that
video. Did the cover.
Yep, and that video is still online. Yep, you can go check it out. Yep, just put in Sabrina Carpenter and the song she played. A song was "Picture to Burn" by Taylor Swift. So it's right there.
So yep. and it's crazy because you would think sometimes from a 10-year-old to adulthood, voices can change a lot. Yeah. Not as, obviously girls are not going to change quite as drastically as guys mostly, but that's really cool. Yeah, so Brian does his musings every Monday. Just one of the many, many things you're going to find there at auburnsports.com.
Absolutely, and we will have blowout coverage this week starting tomorrow of fall camp. We talked to the head coach, the DC, the OC all Tuesday, and then Wednesday we'll be out there to watch and bring photo galleries, observations, video, all that more. from fall camp. You can check us out, auburnsports.com. Sign up for a free trial online. Or you can follow me, and you can follow me on Twitter, such as @BMattAU.
Yeah, so outstanding stuff. Look forward to that every week with Brian's Monday Musings and of course, all the info that we'll have. And, of course, we'll be talking tomorrow and letting you hear some of the audio from Alex Golish and the coordinators. We'll get Joel Gordon first, I believe, then DJ Durkin tomorrow. So, I mean, Alex will be at 11. Then after that will be the two coordinators tomorrow as they get ready to send them out there before the first day of practice. So, I mean, they won't be able to really talk about, you know, what has happened. They can talk about what they're looking for and maybe players that they've heard have had good summers.
Yeah.
That's always funny. It's like, well, coach, I don't know, you haven't been out there with them, but you know, what have you heard about the guys? They've seen the guys. They've had them come in, and I haven't had a chance to see a lot of the players since this spring. I'm sure there'll be some guys that there have been quite the transformation, and especially some of the younger guys.
Right. You bring in a young lineman at a high school. He can do a lot over the course of 9 months, especially when you get him in January and they go through the strength and conditioning program and, start eating right all the time and have everything monitored by professionals. It's amazing what they can do with these young men so fast.
Well, I mean, we've seen just some social media of guys like Juice Diaz.
Yes.
My goodness. He's a monster. And
Elijah
now.
Melendez, yes.
Yeah, I mean, they're both like monsters now.
Yeah, that's – I saw a top 10 list of the best linebacker units in the country. I don't know who put it out, but it didn't have Auburn on it, and I was flabbergasted. I think people are just
– They
don't know yet. They're going to find out.
I think this is a great position for Auburn to be in. Yeah. And, I know a lot of folks were disappointed when Auburn was picked 12th by the media. But and I can understand why. We've talked about that. I mean, look, after what's happened the last few years, I mean, it's much better to have lower expectations. But that means there's not as much pressure on them coming in. And I think Auburn's got a few spots that they're going to really surprise some people. And, yeah, linebacker. I mean, goodness gracious. If DeMarcus Riddick is full speed,
yeah.
Xavier Atkins is a proven All-American, and Auburn's got two of the more impressive-looking true sophomore linebackers in Melendez and Diaz because all four of those guys can fly.
Yes, they can.
And they play, one of the things Alex Golish has talked about, violent.
Right.
And aggressive.
They play that way.
That's exactly what those guys are.
Yep. And got some freshmen in that group, too.
Yep.
And then I think DJ and his group are in the process of signing a really good linebacker class for 2027. So, those guys are committed now, and we'll see how that works out through the next several months till early signing period in December.
Oh, yes. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive hotline. Sponsored by Skybar. Let's see, just a little update since it is former, a former Auburn pitcher and a former number one pick in Casey Mize that was dealt today right at the deadline to the San Diego Padres. The players coming back, I did say I didn't think they were super prospects. Cash Mayfield is the Padres number. Was the Padres number two prospect. He is a lefty. That was their first round pick in 2024.
Wow!
So Mayfield is a pretty big prospect that the Tigers get back, and Jackson Wolf is a rookie lefty with the Padres this year. So they do, but I still think the Braves could have at least matched.
It'd have been nice to see them get a really good starting arm.
Yep.
Than just a dude, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe get a real dude. You know what I'm saying?
All right. We'll get to our final break of the afternoon. Still plenty of time for you to join us if you'd like. 334-321-1390 as we head into the final segment here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Let's get back to the Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final segment here on this Monday afternoon, a day where the Major League Baseball trading deadline came, and this one, you know, last year there were, I think, 35 total trades on the final day, and it was one where, I mean, a half an hour after the trade deadline had closed, there were still being trades reported to Major League Baseball. There were some big last second deals. This year there was really one, the Casey Mize trade to the Padres. Some of the other trades that had been talked about just sort of never came to fruition. I guess either teams didn't held out and wanted more, or the teams that were looking to add decided they weren't going to mortgage their future
right
too much. And this is always interesting. I mean, a lot of times you'll see fan bases either proclaiming that they won and they made a steal. Depends on the way you look at it. Depends on the way things work out, because you don't know.
Right.
You don't know how prospects are going to turn out. I mean, sometimes teams will give up highly touted prospects, and those guys never make it to the majors. I mean, that's the old, and if you can get that, have that bird in the hand, that proven quantity, that's great. But then you go way, way back. I mean, I'll go all the way back for the Braves. When the Braves traded Doyle Alexander.
Wow. We are going back.
To the Tigers.
Yeah.
Years and years ago. Yeah. And helped the Tigers. And hey, look, he helped them, down the stretch, win the division and really helped them in the playoffs. And the Braves got this minor leaguer by the name of John Smoltz.
It turned out pretty good.
Yeah, that worked out really well.
It really did. Yeah.
But, I mean, so many other times you get a guy like that and you give up the prospects and the prospects don't pan out. So we'll see. All these prospects that move today, a lot of the names may not be familiar, but some of them will turn out, but a lot of them won't. And if teams can, if they can either get their team into the playoff or get them deeper in the playoffs or by some chance – help them win the World Series, then it's been a great move. We talked about, I mentioned a while ago, though, one of those exceptions where the prospects, for the most part, really did pan out was the first Juan Soto deal when he went from the Nationals to the Padres. And the Padres gave up three of their top five prospects.
Right.
Number one prospect probably has been the least successful of a bunch. That's Mackenzie Gore, who is a very talented lefty with the Rangers now. But then their number two prospect was C.J. Abrams, who is an all-star shortstop who's leading Major League Baseball in RBIs.
Wow.
He's got 28 homers, 80-something RBIs. He's going to be a 30-30 guy for this year. And then their number five prospect was the youngest guy, and he's the scariest one of the bunch. That's James Wood. James Wood is a massive left-handed power speed outfielder who's, I think he may be 24 now. He's either 23 or 24. And he's going to be a 40-homer hitter. I mean, that's what the Padres gave up for, and they didn't. And look, Juan Soto is great, but he didn't help the Padres win.
Exactly.
So that move, in hindsight, it's like they'd have probably been better hanging on to the guys that they had. Yeah. So we'll see. But anyway, that's one of the fun things here at the trade deadline. And then the other subject we've obviously been talking about is getting ready for the start of football practice all around the country. I mean, Dan was on with us on Friday, and Alabama State's been practicing because they play a game week zero. There are no SEC teams that play week zero. So everybody in the SEC and most of the country is going to be starting practice this week.
Yep. And but you know, teams like North Carolina, TCU, NC State, Virginia, they've all
you got ACC conference games going on in week zero. So, that sort of tells me how far the ACC has fallen.
Right, trying to
that they're having to play week zero, play conference games week zero to get some eyes.
Do you like the idea of everybody playing week zero if we could move the playoffs back?
Yes.
And I do too.
Why not?
I do.
Yeah. I mean, look, players are in great shape.
Yeah.
I mean, they've been there. They've been there all summer long working out. I'm all for OTAs in July. Let's go ahead and start playing the week before Labor Day.
Yeah.
And let's move everything up. And look, Kirby Smart talked about it at Media Days. It is crazy when you're going along, you're playing, and then you play right now, you play that conference championship game, and you wait a month
before
you play again.
Yeah, it really is.
For those teams, I mean, the teams that have had byes, it has not been good. Indiana is the only team that in 2 years of byes has been able to win after a bye.
And some people say, well, there's not enough games to really say anything, but I disagree. I think that is a big issue.
No. Look, I mean, at every other level, they're going ahead and play it. At the NFL, at Division II, you're playing.
Even if you get a bye, it's a 2 week bye.
That's right. You're getting a week off.
Right.
That's it. That's what Kirby said. Give us a week, but we don't need a month.
Exactly.
So I mean, I would hope that something like that could be. I mean,
I would too. I really do.
I'm not counting on the Protect College Sports Act to be the the thing that's going to solve all these problems.
No.
I mean, we may have to go ahead and get the breakaway that you talked about a little bit about last week. I think you wrote a little bit about it last week.
I did. And that was next, or probably one of the next steps if this act doesn't get through Congress and get signed to bill. And I still think when you look at some of the stuff in this bill, like trying to limit the transfers.
There's no way that's going to stand up in court.
Right, exactly. And the part where the Lane Kiffin rule, where you're trying to say
coach from leaving.
Right, that's not going to hold up
before the season's over.
Now we're just building up more stuff, more things to get upset about as it goes to the courts.
Yeah, little writers that keep it getting added to the bill is what it is.
More lawyers making a whole bunch more money. So we're still in this thing, and I don't know where the end of it is. I think you have to get into collective bargaining to end it, but other people disagree. We'll see how it ends up. If it's another 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7, maybe longer, more years, we'll see.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, Brian, before we run out of time, let everybody know again where they can check out, get all this information that you and everybody are putting there at AuburnSports.com.
Blowout camp coverage. We previewed it all, and now it starts. We'll have head coach Golish. We'll have OCDC tomorrow, and then practice gets going on Wednesday morning. We'll be there for all that and more. AuburnSports.com. Follow me on Twitter, /X at BMATAU.
All right, Brian. Again, thanks. Great stuff as always here. Jason Caldwell in tomorrow.
Right.
I will see you over at the complex in the team meeting room tomorrow.
That's right. New spot.
We're in a new spot. Yep. Hope there's somebody there to guide you.
Yeah.
That's going to wrap things up for the Monday edition of The Drive. Great job by Brandon getting us through it. He'll be back tomorrow. Again, JC and I'll be in here tomorrow afternoon to talk about what we heard tomorrow. That's going to do it for the Monday Drive, though. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.